Goon Squad in the house.
Welcome back to the Port Game Day podcast. Your host for this evening is Friendly Andrew, stepping in for John, who is otherwise engaged this evening. Joining me as usual, he's a shadowy member of the Adelaide hip-hop scene and former winner of KFC's Kicking for Chicken. It's Jimmy. How are you going, mate?
Good to be with you, mate. Yeah, good to have a chat after an historic game in China, a bit of a week off, feeling refreshed.
Indeed, indeed. So Port and Geelong kick off round 10 this Thursday night, and it's Indigenous round. It's the Sir Donald Nicholls round, as they're calling it. We're playing at Simmons Stadium. So a bit of background on Sir Donald Nicholls. I probably wasn't aware of the breadth and depth of what he achieved, but he was an Indigenous man, and he was actually the first Aboriginal governor. He was the governor of South Australia. He played football for Fitzroy. And achieved a lot in terms of trying to reconcile, obviously, the first people of Australia and the rest of us interlopers. So the round named after him, a significant person. So, as you said, Port come off the bye, 10 days rest after the slaughter in Shanghai of the Gold Coast, and Geelong come off slightly shorter break, having 6 days, having tackled the Bulldogs into submission last Friday night. For the Power, it's a significant change. Informed Chad Wingard has been ruled out with a tight baby cow, and the calf muscles giving him some grief. Aaron Young's come back in. He picked up 22 touches, 7 tackles, and 6 inside 50s in the Magpies' disappointing loss to the Woodville West Torrens Eagles. For our opponents, the Cats, they've got 3 changes. Cam Guthrie and Darcy Lang come back in, and they name a debutant, a fella by the name of Jordan Cunico. Jordan was drafted late in 2014. He's battled some injuries, but he takes his bow on Thursday night. Apparently, he is a speedy halfback flanker, according to the AFL website. Out of the team, Geelong have lost Nakai Cockatoo. He's done a hamstring. Tom Lonergan is being managed, or they don't rate our second tall forward. And the Irishman O'Connor is back to pulling pints in a pub somewhere in Geelong. Getting dropped. So those are the changes this week. It feels like a while since we've watched some footy, but what are your thoughts on the changes, Jim?
Yeah, well, I mean, Wingard's been in all Australian type of form while running through the midfield. It's a big loss with him coming out the team, and I just think with Young coming in, we've got the luxury now of playing Robbie in the guts a bit more and running through, say, an Archie. And Youngie can obviously spend some time there. But the thing with Youngie is he did play that role that Robbie's been playing this year, last year, and had a lot of success. So I'm confident he can do the job and also run through the midfield. Robbie's been playing well against the lesser teams, but this week we really need him to step up and perform against a top four contender, a top eight type of team. So it's really important he is in good form. We're going to miss a bit with Wingard out. He was obviously in some ripping form in the midfield. The ins and outs for Geelong, I guess, with Cockatoo coming out and Guthrie coming in, that's a bit of a like for like. It's going to be interesting to see how Geelong back it up after a pretty gutsy win against the Bulldogs. Been mentioned this week about the tackle count, setting records with tackles against the Bulldogs. So it'll be interesting to see how they pull up. If we can bring that intensity and that pressure and hit them hard early with our 11-day break, I'd like to think that we have the fresher legs, the fresher bodies to run over the top. So do we really rate Geelong as a good team? If they can back it up this week, I'll probably be convinced. But it's the 6-day break versus a team with a bye, and for all those playing at home, Port did win the bye last week, so it'll be interesting to see if we can back it up this week.
Yeah, certainly from a Port Adelaide perspective, Chad coming out to a blow. It was interesting to hear Ken confirm in his media stuff this morning that Robbie was struggling in the lead up to the China game with a kick to the calf, but the break's come at a good time for him, and he's been able to get over that injury because he was looking limited for the couple of weeks leading into that. And I think this really presents a big opportunity for Archie to move up the ground. Youngie playing the forward lines, and Archie sort of moved to that natural midfield position that he'd been playing in the B grade. So some opportunities there, and obviously. Yeah, it's disappointing not to have Chad. He's been in spectacular form, having moved into the midfield, and I think we will miss his impact around it.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the midfield, I mean, we've got a lot of big bodies around the ball. You look at some of the sizes and heights and whatnot. There's a lot of big boys running around for us, so I like to think we can really get into their midfield, especially Selwood and Dangerfield, obviously the two dangers. Danger players. So if we can really crash and bash, I don't know, you know, the 6 day break is an interesting one. It's a bit of the Geelong supporters in particular would be a bit annoyed with that sort of turnaround, but they've got a second home game in a row. Happy they beat the Western Bulldogs, because the pressure would be on for them to beat Port this week, so the pressure's off them. They've won at home with their new stadium in front of their home crowd. They'll be celebrating their infamous 2007 grand final victory. Maybe that's a bit of motivation for us to get up and spoil the party. So hopefully we come to play. This is a big game, a blockbuster, you could say, on a Thursday night. And it'll be really interesting to see where we're at as a team, coming up against some good opposition. It's funny, we're starting to get a bit of... recognition around the competition. It's a real test for us this week to see if we can live up to the hype.
Yeah, it's a significant test, and I agree with you. It's probably a good thing that the Cats did get up over the Dogs on Friday night. Otherwise, we would be walking absolutely headlong into an ambush, if you like. You mentioned earlier about the tackles. I think Duncan almost set an AFL high. Selden Dangerfield, I think, had career highs, and that was only good enough to sort of knock the Bulldog over by 5 goals, and that was with basically a last quarter surge. So it wasn't whilst the performance was strong and they set ridiculous tackle numbers, it still wasn't enough to completely crush a team. So I think the two guys, Selden Dangerfield, that I mentioned, probably goes without saying, they're the two guys that are critical to Geelong. You feel like if one of them has a good game, it's normally enough to keep sort of to put Geelong in a pretty good position. If both of them play well at the same time, then teams tend to be in a world of pain. Dangerfield obviously had a pretty spectacular game against the Western Bulldogs. He had something like 30-4, so maybe he comes off the pace a little bit this week, and Selwood. Selwood lifts, but it's certainly going to be an interesting one to see whether they just had that 1 week bounce back because they had a bit of media pressure on them, or whether this is whether they've found a new level to go to and they've started to respond.
Yeah, it's going to be important for us to really hit in, and we saw against Geelong last year when we played them. I think it was the Anzac round after quarter time, when there was a bit of a melee after Tommy Jonas went in late into Dangerfield's back. That really got him going. Dangerfield in particular, I mean, if we hit him fairly, I think we can rough him up. But if we start doing dumb stuff, he's going to get ticked off and start playing with a bit of a chip on his shoulder, and that's when he can really turn it on. So it's going to be important. We play fairly, but we play tough, and we really get into him without giving away free kicks. It was interesting last week watching the Bulldogs Geelong game. The Bulldogs didn't really have that recognised ruckman, and the Geelong midfield were getting first opportunity through their first ruck, so that really got them going. It's going to be a different story this week with Ryder in there and also some bigger bodies. It feels like our midfield's a bit more of a cohesive unit compared to the Bulldogs, who have been a bit sporadic. Again, though, those two in particular, you mentioned Selwood and Dangerfield, we stop them. I think we stop Geelong, because they're the ones providing that ball inside 50, and we'll talk about the forwards, but their forwards are clicking, Harry Taylor and obviously Big Hawkins, and that's all about the midfield. So if we can get on top there, I think that'll go a long way to winning.
Yeah, and it's obviously it's the cliche, isn't it? It's where the match is won, and the Ruck contest will be an interesting one. Ryder and Smith, both are in very good form. In fact, they, when you look at their stats, they almost mirror each other as to their position in the overall AFL Ruck rankings. I think sort of coming in sixth and seventh respectively in average hitouts, they're both having good seasons. So it's going to be a really interesting contest. Smith is starting to, his numbers are up across the board for the entire season. He's starting to show some of the ability that was predicted when he first started with the Suns. So that'll be a fascinating contest. I agree, starting at the source and at least making it difficult for Smith to direct his taps and halving a lot of those will be important. And then I agree, we've got some big bodies in the midfield now. We've got plenty of humans that we can throw in the way of Dangerfield, and I agree that we need to be putting pressure and physical impact on him around the ball in the flow of the game, as opposed to doing anything silly like targeting off it. I think that really does set a team like Geelong off. So in terms of the forward lines, you mentioned.
I just wanted to touch quickly on the depth. What can you tell me about the Geelong midfield? In particular, the sort of second tier, third tier types. I know Cam Guthrie's missed some footy. I do rate his ability, but coming off, you know, a week or two off, he might be a bit touch and go as far as his touch goes. But yeah, who are we looking out for there?
Well, I guess, I mean, I don't know what you call Mitch Duncan, but he's basically a frontline midfielder for Geelong now. For so long in those dominant teams, he was sort of the guy they were talking about that would come on and be the star. He's sort of slowly getting himself there. Scott Selwood is also in the team, so he's playing on a wing, obviously well known from his West Coast Eagle days, playing with his brother. He's a relatively known quantity and has played some good AFL football in the past, a bit of in and under. He's on the wing. I'm not sure he'd have the pace to go with a couple of guys who might play in that similar spot to us. Mark Blitzars has run around the wing, but I get the feeling with Lonergan out that they might switch him back this week and just have a look at him in the back lines just to see that. There's been a lot of talk about how down on form he is. And then you've got guys like Jordan Murdoch and Darcy Lang, who are pacey, half-forward, it's hard to call them midfielders, but they push up and down the ground and get involved in transition. So they're another couple. So they're the guys that sort of play a little bit on the outside. And of course, Stephen Motlop pushes up from time to time as well. But he's probably predominantly a forward pocket. I do think that perhaps our midfield depth is a little bit better than theirs, but it can be hard with midfield depth to really rate them from team to team, because we look at our midfield depth and go, we really like some of these players, and I'm sure there's Geelong supporters sitting back saying exactly the same about, you know, your Jordan Murdochs and your Darcy Langs. So tricky to, it can be hard to rate that depth, but I reckon from in terms of real A-grade talent with Gray, Boak, and Wines, with an Ebert really on four exposed form this year, I think we've probably got the a couple of guys in similar classes to Dangerfield and Selwood.
How did you think our wingers went last game? Obviously, Polak's in career best sort of form. Amon came back into the team and showed why he is an important player in our first 22. You know, we saw Archie come in. Didn't see him play much midfield. He's been one in the past that has been given opportunities in the midfield against some better teams and hasn't performed. So it's going to be important to see him in a big game perform, hopefully, and you know, cement his spot for the rest of the year. But, yeah, our wingers and our left footers seem to be in some pretty good form, so that was pleasing. One thing I did notice last game was our delivery inside 50. It's been spoken about at length. We obviously have a lot of inside 50s, but tend to burn the ball a lot. Travis Boak was one for me that was really noticeable and I was really critical of. You know, we just got to use it better. We get a lot of it. We're winning a lot of it. We're just burning it too much, which is a reason we have lost some games. So important again to use that ball when we get it.
I mean, I thought that the obvious Travis Boak ones were toward the end of the game when the heat was both on and off. In that, it sounded like it was an absolute stinker in Shanghai. But the pace had come out of the game. The ones I was most critical of were early on in the piece where we seemed to be kicking to Robbie Gray too much when he had Stephen May on him, not being able to kick to advantage to our forwards. But I mean, I think the difference between this year and last year in terms of those inside 50s is actually we've been able to retain the ball inside 50. So whilst the sort of the initial entry and we're getting lots of sort of repeat entries, that's allowing us to keep the ball in forward half a lot more. That's certainly one of the things that the pundits out there have been pointing to as to this is why Port Adelaide's a better side this year, is that we're keeping teams in our forward half for longer than much longer than we were last year and above AFL average this year. So it's a watching brief. I definitely think we've improved on last year, but I think it'll just continue to have to embed itself and it's just a practice and learn thing and just getting more examples. So the second half of last week was pretty frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we'll talk about the forwards. Look, our forwards are obviously, particularly Dixon, in some great form. I just touching on that delivery inside 50, that could really play into Geelong's hands if we don't tidy that up. Dixon's been moving well up the ground. He's been in awesome form, averaging nearly 2.5 goals a game. So he's got his kicking boot on. Like you said, that delivery into Robbie was really really frustrating to watch. He was getting the short straw. A lot of the time the ball was being kicked over his head and, you know, they'd set up and run it out. With Aaron Young in that role this week, I feel like he's played that role pretty well, where he's able to keep his feet, sneak one out the back and provide, you know, a bit of a target. Generally pretty good over the ball and has good hands, so it'd be good to see him back into some good form. It was interesting to see we went with him rather than Montfries. Montfries has been, you know, in the SANFL for a few weeks. Thought he may have came in because he'd been playing in the midfield as well and providing, you know, a bit of an option up forward. Played well in the past against Geelong up there and added a bit of, extra leadership. So it's interesting we went with Young, but I think it's the right move and, you know, we're backing the coaches with their decisions.
Yeah, was it Youngie coming in was probably a little bit surprising. I thought that this might have presented an opportunity to get another look into the team, just see another player, Montfries fitting into the structure of this year. The other thing that's interesting was Geelong dropping Lonergan, because that really does shift up the way that they approach our tall forward. So, I mean, I think Lachie Henderson is the number one tall defender that they've got now, and he would have to take Charlie Dixon. I can't see there being any other matchup for Dixon in that lineup. I wonder whether they have Blitzars lined up on Westhoff, very similar players, sort of roam up and down the ground, quite similar footballers in the sense that they're tall and run around a lot. And then you've got Trengo and probably maybe someone like a Mackie or Tom Stewart, who's 190 centimetres, not a sort of an AFL, big AFL name, but certainly has played a few games this year, 190 centimetres, so a decent size. Maybe they just play short against Trengo, but I think it indicates sort of not lack of respect, but sort of an analysis that, well, Trengo and Westhoff aren't doing a huge amount of damage in the air. Maybe we can go one short. of their tall backs. And I know that's an interesting one, because they certainly have chopped this up with intercept marks before, and they just sort of leave themselves one less option to do that, which is interesting.
Yeah, you're right. And you look at some of the talk around the Geelong defence, that's a bit of a sign that, you like you said, they don't rate our second and third tall. But yeah, Henderson, I don't know what sort of forms he's been in, being their number one key. Dixon, clearly in some good form, like I mentioned, so he's going to have his hands full there. The other forwards, you know, talk about the smalls now, I suppose. Impey, he's been in pretty good form, I'd say. He's going to be a handful. We've got Sam Gray running through there. Also been all right without being fantastic. I thought it was good to see Archie kick some goals. He's been pretty smart when he gets the ball up there, so wonder what sort of percentage he'll play up there spending some time in the midfield as well. But Robbie Gray's been our most important forward just about. So without Wingard in there and him probably spending some time in the midfield, it's really up to the rest of those small mediums to sort of spread the load and create opportunities when it hits the ground, because Robbie Gray's one of the best in the comp, and we've seen what he can do when he gets the opportunities.
Yeah, so you'd think that Jed Buse for Geelong would be their lockdown small defender, so he would take whoever they are most concerned about, be it Jarman Impey or probably Robbie Gray if he spends any significant period of time down there. And then you've got Zach Tuohy, who's sort of your looser type, so maybe he runs around, lets Jarman Impey run around chasing people, and he runs the other way trying to release the ball. But I think Impey's forward half pressure in China was absolutely superb, and he's really surrounding in some interesting form. And he had some media this week where he was talking about the impact that Jackson Trengove had on him after his father's passing, and he had some interesting comments around that he was enjoying his football in the forward line, but he'd really love to move into the midfield, which is nice to hear from him. He feels like he's been around for a while, but he's still only 21 years old, and so he's still got some scope to develop and maybe get into that midfield rotation, because he's certainly got an interesting range of abilities and physical attributes to add to that mix.
Yeah, interesting. If we play Ryder a bit up forward, we may be able to stretch him as well, with Trengo perhaps spending some time in the ruck. We see Ryder's got a better pair of hands, better on the lead than Trengo. If we could break even with Trengove in the ruck, we could exploit him with Ryder up forward. That's another possibility.
That's a great suggestion. I think one of the things that's been spoken about a bit is obviously the Simmons Stadium is a narrower ground, so maybe you need sort of Dixon and Ryder leading up the wings a little bit more and giving those options to mark. It does tend to be a little bit more of a contested mark game. It narrows it, and it'll be interesting, as you said, for our wingers to deal with that as well. They won't have a huge amount of space to run free.
All right, what about the Geelong forward line? What are you looking at there that you're a bit worried about?
Look, they've got some names in the forward line. They've certainly got some people. So Tom Hawkins feels like he's played for forever. He's obviously the number one key forward. Harry Taylor, they've tried in the forward lines, probably hasn't really done too much up there. It's their second tall, and maybe he's the option that they look at to go, well, if we do need to shift someone back, we've got that option there if Trengove or Westhoff get off the chain. And that's sort of it for their what you call tall forwards. And then Menzel probably plays as almost like a third tall. He's very handy in the air. And Motlop as a small forward, Parsons and Murdoch being the guys that sort of push up and down the ground. So I was sort of thinking like a Tom Jonas on Hawkins, big boy. We sort of miss – this is almost where we miss Alapei Carlisle, his frame to go up against the real – this isn't like a tall key forward. This is just a massive mound of flesh. He's quite good at marking at the ball and kicking goals. So maybe Tom Jonas. I think team defence would be critical regardless.
Jonas, Hawkins has got 20 kilos on Jonas and about 6 inches. So
I think he's going to have 20 kilos on. Yeah. I think Cleary's not much bigger, and Homsch again. None of them have really got the mass to go with Hawkins, so it's really going to be a case of trying not to wrestle too much and trying to get the bowl delivered in, I reckon, above eye level. I reckon if the bowl comes in flat, then Hawkins is going to be hard to get around. And I think that's really where we allowed Jonas to have a fantastic game against Lynch, because the bowls coming into Lynch were generally spoilable for it. And that's the real key, I think.
Definitely, that played into his hands all day, watching him go against Tom Lynch, who was, you know, one of their dangers, and another tick on Tommy's report card for the year. Fantastic sort of year he's having. One of my favourites for sure down there, and he just settles that back line. He's just such a reliable defender now. We can rely on him to be that second man up, third man up. Plays that lockdown defender role, plays taller than what he is, plays bigger than what he is. He's just back to that awesome form we saw him in 2014 when he was burst onto the scene. Tom Cleary could potentially play some minutes on Hawkins. He's played against those big types in the past, being groomed for that, you know, Carlisle type role. He's been in good form. I've been impressed with his season thus far. Jack Homsch, I feel like this might be a game he can really start building some form after a bit of time off, and perhaps being rushed back a bit earlier. Again, those three are our key defenders and have been playing well, and the reason why we're rated highly in the defensive stats across the board. So the three are medium smalls: Hartlett, Broadbent, and Byrne Jones. All been playing well in patches, different times. Do you feel like there are three main small mediums going forward, or do you feel like a Dan Houston could force his way back into the team?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty relaxed about that. I feel pretty relaxed about that. Like, I don't feel particularly wedded to Hartlett or Broadbent being a first 22 player in isolation. Obviously, not putting to one side their requisite salaries, that makes it sting a little bit. But I think Houston certainly clearly had the ability. It would just be a case of getting that clarity of why did he. For him, not for us, getting that clarity of why he was dropped, and then what he has to do at SANFL level to push his way back into the mix. I think for this week, it's there's some interesting matchups because Homsch, we have with our three, let's call them toll defenders, Jonas, Cleary, and Homsch. They've got two, but they probably don't have that third toll. To really go against, whether it's a resting ruckman or anything. So, I mean, Parsons isn't super tall, neither is Murdoch. So it's whether, I guess, Daniel Menzel is the interesting one for me, whether we match up Homsch against him, or whether a Broadbent or Hartlett take that matchup, or even Pittard. Because I feel like Darcy Ben-Jones is a lock for Motlop. I feel like he's the one that takes those types of forwards, but Menzel's an interesting one because he offers some different stuff to Geelong.
You're right. It's going to be interesting. The matchups will change throughout the game, no doubt. We just got to limit their supply and just play that team defense and show the competition why we are rated highly as a defensive unit. We don't have the big names and the sexy All-Australian types that, you know, other Melbourne teams perhaps get recognised for. But as a collective, it's working. And it's not just the back six. It's across the board, the whole defence mentality that we've been playing with has improved since last year. And it's really helping us win games and get that momentum our way and not, you know, drop our heads. It's letting those, you know, defenders have their rest and being nice and sharp when it does come down there, because we are creating stoppages higher up the ground. We're not letting it out of our forward 50 easy, and when it comes in, you know, we play that runoff type, helping type defense, which has been good.
I think that's why that metric of forward half time is it's such an important one, is because, I mean, it's a little bit simple. Like, if you have the ball in your forward half for more time, it's pretty hard for the opposition to score. It's one of those, when you sit back and think about it, it's pretty simple. So focusing on that and just keeping that ball right up the ground makes defenders' life a hell of a lot easier when it's really a supply thing. There's not much that defenders can do when the ball gets delivered in under no pressure, pretty easily. So I agree that our position as one of the better defensive teams is somewhat to do with the back six, but I think is more of a gold star for every single player across the field.
It's interesting. Essendon kicked 110 points, won by 3 goals over Geelong in round 8. Then we had Gold Coast beat them by 25 points. They kicked 124 points in round 7. They are beatable. Collingwood beat them by 29 points, kicked 107 points in round 6. So there's 3 losses in a row they had before they beat the Western Bulldogs. And just that form they had, their first home game with a new stadium, I think they're beatable. You know, they've shown that they're vulnerable against, you know, teams that they should be beating if they're a genuine top four contender. If we're a genuine top four contender, these are the type of games we have to win away from home, because we dropped that game against West Coast, obviously lost to the Crows. We've got to win some away games if we're going to really set up our season, and the draw definitely opens up. So Geelong can be scored heavily against with numbers I've just read out. So
no, absolutely. I mean, their performance against Gold Coast was diabolical, really. The ability of Gold Coast just to waltz all over them, and that's where you've got to take in a dose of confidence. I think is that if Geelong, you've got to expect Geelong to drop off a bit of their pressure from last week. You can't see them sort of 2 weeks in a row having almost AFL record numbers. So I feel like if we can bring a consistent approach and consistent effort to the game, then you've got to think that we're with a massive shout of getting a result. And so it's an eminently winnable game, but as you sort of pointed out, a really critical game for our season. It's one that probably start of the season, Geelong at Simmons Stadium, you're like, oh, yeah, this is going to be tough. It's going to be tough, but it's also winnable, and it maybe picks up that loss against the Eagles, and sort of equals the ledger. So I think that's quite an important one.
Yeah, it sort of feels like, you know, that round one game against Sydney, we set ourselves for that. You know, having not won there very much in the past. Same with Geelong, we haven't won there in 10 years, which has been talked about a lot this week. Again, if we can win this week, really sets up our season. So perhaps we'll go into the 6-pointers, huh?
Yeah, let's do it 6-pointer time. It's the normal way that we end things, obviously without the Quizmaster General in JT, we are limited. So I will ask the questions, James, you provide a response, then I will provide my response subsequently. The first of the 6-pointers is the leading goal kicker for the Port Adelaide Football Club at Simmons Stadium on Thursday night.
I'll take Dixon.
Good choice. I am going to take Robbie Gray.
Nice.
Leading player by Supercoach points for Port Adelaide. Who's going to score the most amount of irrelevant points?
I'm going to take my favourite for the BNF, Brad Ebert.
Yeah, good selection. He's going very nicely at the moment. I am going to go for, I don't even know how many super coach points this guy gets, but no, I'm not actually going to go him. I am going to go with Ollie Wines. I was thinking of Jared Pollock for a time there, but I've scared myself off. All right, now, this is the Tom Harley six-pointer. Tom Harley, Port Adelaide and Geelong, mostly Geelong legend. Tom, known for his one percenters. So is a current Tom Jonas, ranks highly in one percenters for the AFL. One percenters over or under 9.5.
Wow.
Currently averaging 9.3 on the season.
Crazy. I'll take the over, I think. We'll, yeah.
Not a 1% binge. Maybe he'll do 10 1%ers will get you 10%, presumably. Right. We move on. We are playing at the recently renovated Simmons Stadium. I cheated. I know what the crowd was last week.
Yeah, I was quickly trying to look for it then.
James, what do you think the crowd will be at Simmons Stadium on a Thursday night?
Got a funny feeling the capacity's about 40 odd, so I'll take 38.
Right, I am going to take 30,000 exactly, only because the crowd against Western Bulldogs was 30,275. not quite there at the 40,000 mark yet, but I'm sure with the rest of the Port paralleling that happens down in Geelong, they'll get another bloody stand put up, no doubt. And rates up to 40,000. What a joke. The final six pointers, they are combined. We want, James, I want you to tell me who's going to win and what the differential in points will be at the end of the game.
Alrighty, yeah, I think we're primed for this, so I'll take Port by 17 points.
Yes, me too. I feel quietly confident. I feel like this is another step forward for this collection of Port Adelaide footballers to go over to Geelong and run the Chinese cuisine out of the legs and go out, come out winners. I don't know, 20-25 points, I reckon. A tight contest, and then we kick a few late on to rub the salt into the Cats' wounds.
Nice. Yep.
Excellent. All right. Well, that is the Port Game Day podcast for the Sir Douglas Nicholls round. Thank you, everyone, for listening or taking the podcast. Hopefully, you find time in your busy Thursday schedules to have a listen. We'll be back next week for another Thursday game. But in the meantime, once you've taken in the audiology of the Port Game Day podcast, please go on and give us a like. Check out some of the other Port podcasts on the Port Fan Network. Mac are doing some tremendous work with Portia and Rick and the rest of the crew. It's been a pleasure, Jim.
Thanks, mate. Good host. Good work.
Thanks, mate.
Yeah, the Ports.
Our Port.